Prosecutor Robert Mueller is scheduled to go before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday. He's President Bush's nominee to be the next director of the FBI. There have been only a few FBI directors, mainly because J. Edgar Hoover held the post for nearly 50 years. Since Hoover's death in 1972, the four directors who followed him have struggled to step out of his shadow, NPR's Barbara Bradley reports.
The year before Hoover died, the Federal Bureau of Investigation found itself the target of investigation. It turned out that the FBI had been using illegal tactics for years: covert break-ins, illegal wiretaps, warrantless searches. The FBI needed a fresh start with a squeaky clean director. But L. Patrick Gray, who was President Nixon's choice for the new director, almost immediately got caught up in what else? Watergate. At the request of John Ehrlichman, Gray, who was then acting director, burned documents related to Watergate in his Christmas trash. Later, he told Congress he had been wrong.
That the documents were not in fact Watergate evidence, while legally significant, does not lessen my present belief that I permitted myself to be used to perform a mere political chore. I shall carry the burden of that act with me always.
Gray was never confirmed. He resigned when the matter became public. On his second try, President Nixon selected Clarence Kelly. Kelly was the police chief in Kansas City, a cop's cop who had a new vision for the bureau. Homer Boynton, a former executive assistant director at the FBI, recalls that under J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI spent too much time on small crimes like burglaries and stolen cars.
It was what we called quantity over quality, and the agents were going out and investigating a lot of minuscule type cases when there were other more important things that needed to be done. And Clarence Kelly put a program in which was called Quality Over Quantity.
He steered the FBI toward investigating white-collar crime, the mafia, terrorism, real threats to society. But Kelly had to spend much of his time separating the FBI from Hoover's abuses. He said the FBI had entered a new chapter.
The abuses occurred chiefly during the twilight of Mr. Hoover's administration. I believe no man should again serve as director more than 10 years.
Congress did limit the director's term to 10 years. Kelly himself served only half his term. He resigned after it was reported he used FBI agents to install window valances at his apartment. If Kelly turned the wheel of reform, it was William Webster who put his foot on the gas. Webster was a federal judge, apolitical, the embodiment of integrity. Unlike Hoover, he had no qualms about investigating powerful groups. One of his first targets was Congress. Abscam began as a simple investigation of art theft and ended by snagging six congressmen and one senator for trading political favors for money. This was new territory for the FBI. Homer Boynton, who worked closely with Webster, says no sooner was the probe revealed than there was a backlash.
Getting involved in a case like Abscam is like putting your head in a buzzsaw.
The politicians cried entrapment, and the Senate held hearings on the FBI's conduct. William Webster says the Bureau stood its ground.
We won every case. That's the short answer. We won every case against every challenge of entrapment or illegality. And I knew that it would be almost fatal, at least to my career, if we didn't deliver on the Abscam cases. And when we did, no one after that questioned that we knew what we were doing.
The FBI under Webster also plunged into espionage cases, catching Aldrich Ames, John Walker, Ronald Pelton, and others. He restored public confidence in the Bureau, so when Webster stepped down from the FBI in 1987, President Reagan appointed another federal judge, William Sessions. This time, the formula did not work. Journalist Ronald Kessler learned that Sessions enjoyed the perks of office a little too much.
The abuses consisted of, for example, using the FBI plane to go to ballets with his wife, using FBI funds to build a fence around his home, and on and on and on. And the amazing thing was that even after these abuses were presented to Sessions, which I did in an interview with him, he continued to engage in them.
Kessler reported on Sessions' actions. The Justice Department launched a probe and concluded that Sessions had acted unethically. Sessions was fired, a decision he bitterly opposed in a final press conference at the FBI.
Now, because of what I would term scurrilous attacks on myself and on my wife of 42 years, It has been decided by others, and now you know by the President of the United States, that I can no longer be as forceful as I need to be in leading the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
The next day, President Clinton nominated Federal Judge Louis Free to the post. Unlike Sessions, Free was a former agent, and he had been a star federal prosecutor. Clinton called Free, quote, a law enforcement legend. And Free lost no time in winning over his agents. One of his first acts was to catch the Unabomber. John Collingwood is an assistant director of the FBI.
The FBI as an institution, regardless of all its efforts, was simply stuck. And when Director Free became director, he refocused the investigation, he added resources, he added technical expertise, and ultimately, through all of the new energy that was put into that case, the FBI was able to solve it after many, many years.
Under Free's leadership, the FBI caught the Oklahoma City bomber, working from a little piece of axle. It tracked down the World Trade Center bombers, and it built the case against the terrorists who attacked an American military base in Saudi Arabia. Free also shielded the Bureau from any whiff of politics. In his most public fight with the Clinton administration, he told Congress he felt that an independent counsel should investigate Democratic fundraising during the 1996 election. Elsa Walsh is a writer for The New Yorker who has covered Free's career.
It was not unusual to hear people say that, you know, Clinton really hated Free. And I once asked Free about this, and he said, you know, his mother used to call him and say, why are you making the president so mad? And he said he would sort of laugh and just say, Mom, I'm just trying to do my job.
Free earned the love of Congress, especially Republicans, for his independence. But then came a series of embarrassments, which critics trace back to Free's philosophy.
One attitude was that management was the enemy.
Journalist Ronald Kessler. He says Free, the former agent, began reassigning supervisors at headquarters to the field.
It so happens that most of those people were very experienced, and when it came to some of the major investigations like the Wenho Lee case, there were no experienced people to supervise, and that really directly led to the problems in that case.
Wenho Lee was a nuclear scientist initially suspected of espionage. The FBI eventually had to drop all but one charge of mishandling information. Then, in Free's final months, came a 1-2 punch to his reputation. First, the FBI was embarrassed to find one of its own agents, Robert Hansen, had been spying for the Russians for 15 years. Then, just weeks before Free's retirement, the FBI discovered it had not turned over documents to the defense lawyers for Timothy McVeigh. But already, FBI watchers are revising their assessment upwards. They praise Free for extending the FBI's reach into every part of the world. Historian Richard Gid Power says Free has positioned the FBI to play a new role in the country's security.
Increasingly, threats to the United States that in earlier eras would have called for the Marines to land are now being defined as law enforcement matters and the FBI lands, which means that the FBI is going to become really the nation's first line of defense against foreign threats overseas.
Which is the mantle the next FBI director will pick up. Barbara Bradley, NPR News, Washington.